All right. So let's look at our text. And our next verse says, "She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar." I want you to picture this. God gives us pictures for a reason. There is such a thing as the sea and ships and land for a reason, right? And I want to start with a question, and this is really, really relevant, not only to tonight, but throughout the study and hopefully forever for you. Some of you have heard me ask this before because we've talked about it. Do you see yourself primarily as a body with a soul or a soul with a body? Big difference. Big difference. Do you see yourself primarily as a body with a soul or a soul with a body? We live in a world that considers a lot of, there are a lot of people that consider themselves and other people a body without a soul. So if you consider yourself a body with a soul, that's progress. But the fact is, we are a soul, and we have a body. So for us to just invest everything in the physical, I was reading a book that Sharon gave me this morning, in that tree book, there you are, and it had this little factoid, and it said, if you take all the carbon, iron, calcium, and other elements to make a human body, it values at about $4.50.
Oh my gosh.
Think about that. We just read how we are more valuable than the most precious of pearls. What is it that... It's not our flesh. It's not our flesh. So at the very beginning of the study, when we came together, we talked about how God has given us his wisdom in order for us to rule over and grow our soul. But only we can do that. He doesn't make us do that. He invites us to do that, and he'll come alongside. Make sense? Okay. I'm going to skip a few of the things I was going to use to introduce and move on. Hi, guys. Welcome. Are you comfortable back there? You good? How is the woman of valor like a merchant ship? Now, that is a fascinating picture, right? And what kind of food is she bringing from afar? And who is she feeding? I wrote a very important verse on the top of the board for tonight. It's from 2 Corinthians 4:18. It says, "For the things which are seen are temporal." This is the physical realm. "But the things which are not seen are eternal." Okay? And as we talked about the first night when I lit those candles, and I said how I love every Friday when I light the Sabbath candles, and there are two of them, it reminds me that God has called us as humans to live in a very unique place. No other living beings are invited to live in the position that he's called us to live as humans, let alone women, which we'll talk about. He's made the angelic realm, which is the spiritual realm, completely spiritual, okay? And then he's made the animal kingdom completely physical. Got it? So there are animals, and there are angels. And then there's us. And we get to live right in between. Okay? And here's what the woman of valor does. She can have one foot in this realm and one foot in this realm, and she can walk in perfect balance and composure and awareness of both realms at once every moment. Is it possible for us to achieve that in this life? Probably not. But that's what Proverbs 31 pictures. That's our goal. And every step we make in that direction, what do we have? That shalom word. Shalom. That's what peace is. Because everything is in its place.
But we vacillate. Sometime we're all the way over here and everything is just physical. Everything's just physical. And all the cues that we take for how we think and how we act comes from this realm. Now, the physical world isn't an evil world. It's not a bad world. It's the world God's given us to live out this life. But we can't be unaware that there's this world, okay? And this is the world that became fuzzy and distant in the Garden of Eden when things got broken. So we're in the process of making our way back to Eden and learning how to be aware of both worlds. Who came and lived out a life aware of both worlds every moment, every step, every second? Who was that? Our Master. That's the only human. And that's why he came, to show us how that looks. He came to show us how that looks. The Torah tells us. But Jesus came and did it. Isn't that great? Well, that's the next point. When I started studying this years ago, and Sharon, you were on that journey with me, I became really excited because I started to think, okay, so the place of connection between these two realms is the shore. If we have the ocean here, no sharks. I said that to Pam because she had a close encounter last week. And then here's the physical realm. The place that brings these two together, where she stands in between, I'm saying she because we're talking about our Ishakayo right now. Any human is supposed to occupy this space, but we're called to do it in a very dynamic way. This word in Hebrew is called sof. Okay? Shore. Place of connection. Well, there's another word in Hebrew that's pronounced sof. And when I discovered this, I thought, okay, there has to be something here for us to learn. Guess what it is? Lips.
Oh, so cool.
What in the world do lips have to do with shore? I want you to think about what lips have to do with connection.
Words.
How are words? What do words connect?
People.
How would my soul know anything about your soul if there was no such thing as words? Whether they're spoken or whether they're written. That's why God says the word became flesh and dwelled among us, because he's the message. He's the connection. He's the communication. So our lips make it possible. If you all came here tonight and sat down for the next 90 minutes and we all just looked at each other and thought really strong thoughts, chances are pretty good we would not be able to use telepathy to communicate. And when we all left, we wouldn't be any closer together. But my hope is that at the end of tonight, we'll be closer, and we'll be closer because of words. Because words are containers for truth, if they're used properly. If they're not used properly, they bring division. Powerful. Words are powerful. They have a lot of potential for good or evil. So, getting back to shore, sof, lips, connection, what is something else that we do with our lips that brings connection?
Prayer.
Yes. Well, that would be words. Oh, yeah. Spoken to God, either in our mind or spoken out, words bring connection. Good. Kiss. For centuries, the kiss has been the way that lovers and friends show affection and connect. No coincidence. What else do we do with our lips, ladies?
Eat.
We eat. So eating, using our mouth, is what keeps our spirit and our flesh connected. Because how many days does it take medical people of no eating for those to completely disconnect? That's what death is. It's a disconnect.
Couple months.
It depends on how much you have to live on. So kissing, words, eating, all bring connection. So God hid that treasure in his language to say, this woman of valor is what connects the spiritual realm and the physical realm. She walks in both, and she does it perfectly. Any comments or questions about that?
Robin, in years gone by, you made a metaphor for this straddling the shoreline,
yes.
One foot in the water, one
yes.
foot on land. And if it, I've never forgotten that we're amphibious.
We are amphibious. We are. And she's able to navigate on land or sea. And here's the thing. Here's the thing.
In order for us, as women of valor, to be a merchant ship, we have to leave the familiarity and the security of this physical land and venture out into the unknown. And it can be scary out there. And you can feel lonely out there. And it's unpredictable out there. It can be dangerous out there. But she does not cling to what is familiar and safe. She's courageous. And she ventures out. And she is pictured as a merchant ship. Now, let's go a step further. It's not a canoe, or it's not big boat where people go on pleasure cruises. It's not a fishing boat. What is unique about a merchant ship? She takes something with her to trade for something else. That's what a merchant ship does. What is she doing out here? What is she trading, and what is she getting?
I believe that she is seeking to trade time. She's willing to invest time, and she's willing to enter a place of prayer. She's a woman of prayer and meditation. And she launches her soul into that invisible realm. She connects with the divine, and she returns with food for her household. How amazing is that? How amazing is that? There's a book called Beloved of the Soul, and a sentence I found really relevant to this. It says, prayer is the bridge that enables us to step outside our known selves to a reality beyond. And you might think, it's hard. It's hard and it's unfamiliar, and I don't know how to do it well. The woman of valor does not stay parked at the shore where it's safe, but she ventures out and she trades her time. She trades her very self for what God has to say by investing in prayer. I mentioned this book last week by Miriam Cosman, and I just opened it today to kind of review it. I'm going to share with you something she says, and she's telling us what we're talking about. She says, we get up in the morning ready to go. Our critical eye checks out what is wrong and what needs to be fixed, what wasn't accomplished yesterday and what needs to be done today. We're heavy into the male mode of action. Remember last week I said she represents the male mode of action with an arrow. Okay? Is there anything wrong with being male? Is there anything wrong with wanting to accomplish and do? Absolutely not. But the male mode tends to be this part of life. Action-oriented, accomplishment-oriented, physically oriented. That's how men and masculinity tend to be designed. Remember I said the circle represents the female soul? If this is doing, what do you suppose this is?
Being.
And boy, do we find that hard. We find our identity and our self-importance, distraction, all of the above, in this physical world of doing, 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 and then God calls us to a Sabbath rest, or any time during the week, he calls us to cross the shoreline and trade our time and just be. And what we get to take home with us when we return to this realm is food. Not only for ourselves, but for those in our household. Make sense?
So she goes on to say, we're heavy into the male mode of action, doing, progressing, accomplishing, changing, always with an eye out for the next problem that needs to be solved. Then comes the time for morning prayers. Prayer is about entering into the female mode of being. Prayer is not a shopping list of all the things we need. It is about being in relationship with God. If we look at prayer as a means to manipulate God into giving us our heart's desires, then we are back into the male mode, trying to fix things and change. So we can even do prayer in a very physical way. Have you ever thought about that? In this case, sometimes we even try to improve God himself with our prayers. I have. I've explained situations to him and said, now here's what's going on. And here's what I think would be an awesome way to solve this. We miss the point entirely. In its deepest essence, prayer is not about fixing, accomplishing, or progressing. Prayer is about moving into the circle of relationship.
You know, Robin, you were not in services to listen to Tim. Mm-mm. This is exactly what he talked about yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
He talked about the hard work that is involved in going in the merchant ship under the sea, prayer,
meet
with Hashem, and to worship, and the hard work of being able to, help me, ladies,
be
who
focused,
are just
not be quiet.
It has to be intentional.
Really, you know, doing liturgy during a prayer service is really difficult work because you've got to leave the land and the busyness and all of the distractions and allow yourself to just
be.
And it's time. It's a time commitment. And it grows sweeter and sweeter over time, which is just the truth about everything that is centered on our Father and Yeshua. It's sweeter and sweeter every day the closer you get.
And I really want us to catch, I really want us to catch this vision as women, that although we are called to be doers many times in life, obviously we are physical, we have to do, we do a lot, we can multitask, we do, but God has put something within the feminine soul that he intends for us to model, to demonstrate, and to bring even men alongside into the world of being. I got to meet Miriam Cosman in person a few years ago, and she said, women have abandoned the circle. We've abandoned the circle. We've been told this isn't an important place to be. It's more important over here. This is even represented in hemispheres in the world. This is kind of the Eastern Hemisphere in its extreme. Okay. And then in the Western Hemisphere, like in America, do. Make money, accomplish, you know, be ambitious. And people find that admirable. And the thought of being, it's a waste of time. Let's correct our thinking.
She is a merchant ship. And she brings her food from afar. It's generally recognized that it is the woman who has the greater capacity to influence the family's love and awe of God. But to do that, the woman has to be in deep and authentic connection with herself and with Hashem. It's a great quote. There's also a verse in Proverbs, chapter 23, verse 23. And it says, buy truth. Purchase it. Don't sell it. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Get instruction. Where do you get that?
What do you trade for it? Time. And being. I'm sure you've all heard the saying, God did not create us to be human doings. But human beings. So, we have the animal kingdom, We have the angelic kingdom, we have the spiritual realm, we have the physical realm, and as humans, have you ever thought about it? We are uniquely placed right in the middle. No other creature does that. I used to think, well, if I had to pick, I'd love to be an angel, of course. In fact, I think I'd rather be an angel than a human. But here's the thing. There's a book that I love called Angels Don't Leave Footprints. Rabbi Twersky wrote a book called that. Because angels are angels, but they don't leave footprints in this realm for others to follow and learn from and grow from. He's given us that opportunity and that invitation. Did you know that in the Hebrew language, the word Hebrew literally means one who has crossed over? Isn't that cool? One who has crossed over. So if we claim to follow and love the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this Hebrew nation, and the God that they have given us the word and given us the foundation of our faith, we have to be willing to cross over. We have to be willing to cross over. There's a saying, many of you have probably heard it. It says, a ship in the harbor is safe, but that is not what ships were meant for. I have stayed parked here for years in my life. I mean, there have been times, long periods of time, where I have just been afraid to leave the familiar and the safe. And you talk about a rut. You talk about a meaningless, frustrating walk, especially if you've dabbled in the spiritual realm and you come back here and you cling to the shore. Very, very frustrating. If you're feeling that yearning in your life, venture out. Venture out. Don't cling to the edges of the pool. as we've read. I discovered a really cool little verse. Well, it's a big verse. It's a sweet verse. It's in Ezekiel 27:25. I just found this morning as I was going over this. Hadn't found it before. If you get it before I do, just read it. Ezekiel 27:25. Anybody got it? Okay, I'm there. It says, the ships of Tarshish were the carriers for your merchandise. In other words, God is describing merchant ships. Listen to what he says. And you were filled and were very glorious in the heart of the seas. You were filled and you were very glorious in the heart of the seas. There's a connection between that verse and our woman of valor. Isn't that great? So, it wasn't always like this. There wasn't always this division between what is spiritual and what is physical. When was the last time we didn't have that division? Eden. And that's what this life is about. We're making our way back to Eden. When we no longer have this division, and he's called us to be part of that process and bring repair. And there's a verse that describes that, and it's in 1 Chronicles 16, verse 31. You've heard it, but maybe you've never thought of it in these terms. Listen, it says, let the heavens be glad, that's the spiritual realm, and let the earth rejoice. The physical realm. And let them say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Let the sea roar and all it contains. And let the field exalt and all that is in it. So there's going to come a day when all this division and all of this separation and tension between what is spiritual and what is physical and the need for us to, you know, be aware of both, it's all going to be made right. But in the meantime, he says, trust me and know that this is true and this is who you are and this is how you walk. The world might think we're crazy. The tent might look small from the outside. Remember? But it's a big place. It's a broad place.
What was that verse, Robin?
That verse is 1 Chronicles 16:31. So if you're trying to walk, and either your left side or your right side is either crippled or wounded, your progress, you're going to go in circles. Or your progress is going to be slow. Or it's going to be stilted. Remember last week? Balance equals beauty. Balance equals beauty. Sometimes I work myself into a lather with physical activity, and my soul is starving. Rarely do I have the problem on the other side. Rarely do I have the problem where I just can't get out of God's presence to wash the dishes. Why are we like that? So, like I said, there was only one human was able to model this divine dance perfectly, and it is a divine dance, truly. This is why it's vitally important for us to become so familiar with Yeshua's life, his words, and his deeds. It's vital for our growth because he's our master. He's the one that we learn from. He's our rabbi. So unceasing prayer is to be my life source, but not in a way that's weird or awkward to the people around us. You know, religious zeal can be embarrassing. And we want our life to be beautiful. And we want this spiritual connection that we have and the way that we're out in the seas trading time for treasures to take back to our families. It becomes something that we incorporate into our life, ideally, that just works its way out in everything we say and do. And people see beauty. People hear life. They're encouraged. It's subtle and it's skillful when we get it right. And there's a little prayer that I found years ago, and it says, kneel while standing up straight, scream without making a sound, and dance without making a move. Isn't that beautiful? And if that doesn't make sense to you, try again in a few months, because sometimes we have to grow into these ideas. Kneel while standing up straight. Scream without making a sound. Dance without making a move. We're not supposed to live ridiculous, showy lives that the world goes, what is that? We're supposed to live lives that make sense and that people can admire. And they come and say, where do you get your hope? Where do you get it? Why are you so stable when everything's going to hell in a handbasket? Thoughts? Comments? Then we'll move on to our next verse. She rises while it is yet night, and she provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. Where did she get her food? That's where she got it. All right. She has spent a great deal of time offshore. Here's the thing that I want us to really notice, though. In this verse, let's back up to the first two words. She rises. You know what that says to me? It says something really important about her. She takes initiative and responsibility for her own call to action, because no one else can do it for her. All right? She overcomes the impulse to remain where she is. All right? Even if she alone is facing the darkness and needing to prepare nourishment for the rest of her household. Because when she overcomes this temptation to stay put, she does it when it's still night. Now, we look outside. We see dark. We're not talking about a literal dark. We're talking about those times in life. It's just hard to see light. It just doesn't make sense. And it seems to go on forever. And it's hard to imagine that the sun is going to rise and that things are going to feel right again. And isn't that the time, ladies, when it's so tempting to just pull the covers over your head and stay put? and not do anything for yourself, let alone trying to feed anyone around me. Because I feel entitled. I feel entitled during those times in my life. I'm going through a really rough time. Things don't make sense. Leave me alone. And that's what we do. But the woman of valor doesn't do that. She overcomes. She rises. She takes the initiative. And she rises up. She recognizes the needs. She has the food because she's been out on the sea. And she feeds her household. Who's her household? Those people who she's responsible for. Those people in her. Yes. Those people in her world. And she also reserves portions for her maidens. You know, historically, God's people have been required to rise up while it's still night in history. Not only individually, but as a nation, haven't they? They've been required to overcome a lot. I was reading, this is what I do for fun. I was reading Art Scroll's Song of Solomon commentary, and I came across a sentence in the introduction, and it stopped me. It was like, wow, it was worth reading just the introduction if I never got any further. It says, greatness is not born of complacency. It is forged from the tension of a struggle to emerge from darkness and create light. So night in this chapter and in the word in general represents those times in life where you can't see the sun, but we know, because we've all taken science, that even at night, the sun has not ceased to exist. It's just temporarily obscured, right?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's temporarily obscured. And he says his mercies are new every morning. And there are so many verses that we read about how he brings the morning. And he brings the sunrise. And he has a watchman set to watch for morning. And he's got it. But sometimes he lets us go through a night just to see, so we can see, what are we going to do? There's a verse that says, when you fail in the time of struggle, your faith is weak.
Hello. You were talking about that, reminding me of resistance. Like when you work out, you exercise.
Thank you.
Resistance is what builds the strength.
Thank you. And it's interesting, Kathy taught me this. Kathy and Kathleen, my two dear friends, lift weights and I watch. It's not my thing, but they're awesome at it. And they were learning and explaining to me that when you do weightlifting, you're taught to put your attention on the muscle that you're working on. Because when you do that with your attention and your concentration, it makes the resistance workout all the more effective. There's a spiritual principle there. There's a saying that says, where your mind goes, your energy goes. That's why I always say, be where you are. Don't be in the past regretting and don't be in the future dreading, but be where you are and soak up the moment. Because the enemy, see, he prowls around like a lion. And you know how he robs us? You know how he is a thief? He is a thief by making us live anywhere besides this moment. Even right now, you have a choice. You could lose this opportunity by thinking about something that has happened or dreading something that might happen or wondering or, like me, creating entire scenarios. I am so good at it. It's a movie in my head, you know? It's busy up here. I told Grant once, I said, you can walk out of the room. I'm trapped in here with me. And it is busy in here, okay? But do you know that when you think a thought, your brain produces the chemicals mm-hmm. that would come along if that event was really happening? So when your husband's 2 hours late and you're planning his funeral, it's horrible. what if the plane crashed? What if, you know, what?
They would just call.
Oh, yeah, they would just call and, you know, he's not answering. And you begin to think of all the terrible things that are probably going to happen or could be happening. You are producing all those horrible negative chemicals that can make your body very, very sick. That's one of the reasons people are so sick. And when I realized that, I said, ah, then the opposite is true. We can use our imagination in the other way, and we can begin to imagine beautiful things and wonderful things and glorious things and happy things, and then we produce those good endorphins, don't we? Mm-hmm. But why don't we do that more?
Because some people say that it would raise your expectations too high, and then you're going to be disappointed. That's just what my friend would tell me.
That's interesting.
I'm not saying I believe that.
Well, if we create scenarios that require the people around us to step up to perfection in our opinion, we're going to be disappointed. Because expectations are premeditated disappointments. But God will never disappoint us. And I've gotten to the point, you guys, when I pray for my kids, I picture them being the people I want them to be. When I pray for my man, I picture him the husband that I need him to be. You can't lose. You can't lose with that. But thank you, Liz, because it's a good point. Comments? It's a lot to think about, isn't it? Turn to Psalm 46. Verse 4. It says, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy dwelling places of the Most High. We're talking about Jerusalem. God is in the midst of her. She will not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. That word when means until. The actual translation is God will help her until morning dawns. So even during the dark night, the nations made an uproar. The kingdoms tottered. He raised his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. But he will help her until morning dawns. He does it on a world level, and he does it on an individual level. Something else that's really cool about that passage is the river whose streams make glad the city of God. If you've ever been to Jerusalem, the rivers are all underground. There aren't rivers flowing all over that country and the city of Jerusalem. They're underground in Jerusalem. You can't see them from the surface. So the very life source of Jerusalem is hidden, just like ours is. But he will be in the midst of us until the morning dawns. I just love, love, love that passage. So are you starting to catch a glimpse of how strong and determined this Ishakiah really is? Really. She is one who can stand during times when the light of truth seems to just be dimmed and nearly snuffed out entirely. It's hard to remember a time that you felt God's presence, that life made sense, that you felt hope to go on, but he's still God. And he calls us to rise up, even at night, and not only be strong, but give strength to the people around us. I can't do that. I get discouraged very, very quickly. This is a supernatural description. This is a goal. There's a verse in Proverbs 4:18. It says, the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. Isn't that a cool verse? The path of the righteous, it's us. It's what our life is supposed to look like, is like the light of dawn that gets shiner, that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. That's why I think Rosh Kodesh is so cool. You know, the Bible mentions this time that God invites us as his people to go out and look up at the night sky at the beginning of every new month and praise him for who he is. Now, I would think he would have us do that when the moon is at its fullest and most glorious, because it's beautiful then and you can see stuff. But that's not what he calls us to do. He calls his people to go out and look up in the sky when you can't even see the moon. You thank him for the moon. Think about that. That's because that's what he has required his people to do since the dawn of time. And we look up and we see a sliver, if we're lucky, sometimes not even that. And we have a blessing we pray when we remember to acknowledge the new moon. I'm getting better at it. We don't worship the moon or the sky. We worship the God that created the moon and the stars and the sky. And we know that the next night there's going to be a little more light. And the night after that there's going to be a little more light. And what happens 15 days in? Sometimes every other month, every third month, every month, every month. The moon gets brighter and brighter and brighter until it's full and glorious. And it's like he's saying, guys, remember, there are periods and seasons of life when you reflect me fully and we're more in sync because you're reflecting the light of the sun to the world and everything's working like it should. And then you go out the next night and it's like, oh, it's not as full. It doesn't last. It's not sustainable. And he knows that. He says, because right now we're in a physical world. It's not always going to be like that. But even the night sky reminds us to praise him and trust him and know that that light is going to get stronger and bigger and fuller. Isn't that cool? Mm-hmm. That's why I love Rosh Kodesh. That's why I love Rosh Kodesh. And we're not going to let the witches steal it from us, are we? When we first, as women at Beth Tikkun, started to explore the idea of like gathering together and having Rosh Kodesh, well, we're going to light a fire and like sacrifice animals and dance and, you know, people were making jokes. But it's like, hold on. This is God's idea. Just because some people have taken it and twisted it and defiled it doesn't mean it's not a beautiful idea. Make sense? Yeah. Another thought I had to, he invites us. We miss out if we don't do it. He says, come and let's do this together. And he says, the day that comes that you look up into the night sky and the sun ceases to shine by day and the moon ceases to be there by night, that is the time that I have abandoned my people Israel. I love that verse. Don't ask me where it is because I don't have it memorized right now. Why do we cover our eyes when we sing the Shema? Some of you come to the prayer service, and you've noticed that some of us stand and will say, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Why do we do that? We're saying, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. And we're covering our eyes to remind ourselves that we don't live according to what we see. Because if we take our cues from the animal kingdom and from the physical realm, We're toast. I heard a teacher the other day, Kathy and I were listening to an amazing teacher, and she said, we have voices in our head. We have physical, the animal part of us speaks to us and accuses us and tells us that, you know, the mistakes we've made cannot be overcome, and we're too stupid, we're too weak, we're too something to do what we know needs to be done, and so we quit. And those are the voices that talk to us. And there's a difference between humility, which God requires, and humiliation. The enemy speaks humiliation. God responds to humility, and he says, you know that I'm God, you fear me, I will raise you up. There are no limits. I will help bring you to your potential. But why do we keep animals in cages? If you go to the zoo, the lions, the tigers, and the bears are in cages because they're dangerous. This voice, this animal voice that talks to our head and lies to us is dangerous. There's going to come a day when the lion
will lie down with the lamb, and there won't be dangerous animal voices talking to us in our head anymore, because all will be one. Does that make sense? There won't be this disparity anymore, this tension between what is spiritual, what is physical, what is true, what is false. Not everything in the physical realm is false, but the world lives according to rules that discount a physical or a spiritual realm. So it's very inside out and upside down. I used to read a book to my kids called Inside Out and Upside Down. So who's the woman who demonstrated rising up while it was still night and feeding her household? This is a fun one. Think of a woman who lived in a palace during a very dark time in history. Her father was pitching little boys into the Nile River, but she went down to take a bath with her maidens, and she hears a little baby, and she looks among the reeds, and she sees a basket floating, and her heart is moved, and she reaches, and she brings this baby not only into her own arms, but into the palace, and raises him under the authority of her father, who wanted to kill the Hebrews. How crazy is that? And how much courage did that require? That happened. Imagine that. It would have been so tempting for someone to see the Hebrew baby and go, ooh, you know, she probably would have been considered brave if she would have just hushed the fact that there was a Hebrew baby floating in the river. But to take him home and to make him her son, she was a courageous woman. She's not named in our scriptures, but there is a tradition in the Talmud that names her Bithia. Bithia, good one. Did you know that?
Yes.
And I believe that she is just an ideal example of someone rising in the midst of darkness. I mean, she was surrounded by hostility and tension, but she took initiative. She rose up while it was still night, and she did what needed to be done. And what is the result? What is the result of what she did? Who was that baby? Kim?
Moses.
And what did he do?
Free the
He rescued the... Think about it.
Started the Israelite nation.
Think about it. There's a verse about her in the Talmud. It's kind of cool. And this isn't like, you know, God breathed scripture like the Bible, but it's history. And it says that when Pharaoh sent the Jewish people out, God said to him, "You sent out the fathers, but my sons you cast into the Nile. In retribution, I shall cast you into the sea, destroying you. But I will take your daughter, Bithia, and let her inherit the Garden of Eden." I know, right? I know.
I wonder if she went out with a mixed multitude.
Oh, I imagine. So I just got goosebumps.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Me too.
So who were the maidens that this woman of valor feeds? She feeds her household, because she doesn't have to get caught off guard when life gets hard. She doesn't have to scramble around for resources. She's ready. And she feeds her household, but she has a portion for her maidens. I've been pondering this for years, and I have some ideas. How about you guys? Who do you think the maidens are?
Younger women.
Younger women who have the potential to grow into other women of valor. The women that she's discipling, the women that she's loving, the women that she's teaching, the women that she's sharing with. Those are the women in your life, ladies. Those are the maidens in your life. Are you feeding the maidens in your life? Even the difficult ones? Even the difficult ones. I could name women in my life who have staying power. There are some in this room. Women who have cared for critically ill husbands and children, and parents who day after day take care of their little ones without murmuring or complaining.
I know women who've lost their own children to tragic death, and they continue to walk forward trusting God, and that someday it'll all make sense. These, to me, are women of valor, and they're examples of rising while it is still night and moving forward. So even when life feels dark and scary, it's more challenging to remain focused on the light that we remember is real. Got it? It can become really challenging to remember and to believe in the light that we knew and experienced was real, even when it's dark. We have a choice. We always have a choose. We choose the world we live in. Grant says that to me so much I could kick him sometimes. But he'll say, Robin, you choose the world you live in. And I'm like, but I can't. You choose in any given moment I can live in the world of connection where I experience optimism, harmony, confidence, faith, or I can live in the world of estrangement where I have feelings of anxiety and fear and sadness.
God's voice speaks to me from this realm, the world of connection. There are lower voices that speak to me from the world of estrangement. But we choose which world we live in. We can hear these voices because we're physical beings, but we can choose to say, uh-uh, not true. It's like Grant will say, so well, because I have been plagued by fear my whole life, and it's been a hard battle for me to overcome being a fearful person. I inherited it. I've experienced anxiety attacks. I lived in a stole. I was just bound with fear for so much of my life. And I'm married to a guy that was patient with me, and he taught me with truth. And he said, every thought that comes into your mind, you strap it to a chair, and you shine a light in its eyes, and you say, where did you come from? And you dismiss it when you know it's not a friend. But it's up to you. And you're strong. You can do that. And it takes practice. Remember last week I talked about the defaults we have that our brain just automatically goes to, I'm a loser. Can't do it. We have to ask God to help us reset those defaults. Right? Questions? Comments? So we're moving along. And we're going to enter our next verse. She considers a field and buys it. And with the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. I have a sign. I went shopping with a friend recently, and I went to this little Christmas shop. And way up high, so the guy that works there had to climb a ladder, and I want that one. And this is what I wanted, because I wanted this in my kitchen, because I love this. It says, the best way to predict your future is to create it. Why do I like that so much? Because it's taken me 58 years to learn that I can choose which world I live in and what happens in my life and the life I build, I choose. There are things that come into my life that I can't have any control over, but I choose how I respond to them. I choose my response to everything. So, our woman of valor, she considers or she envisions. And the meaning of this word envisions is very significant. You know what it means? It means that she sets her mind on accomplishing a specific goal. And she thinks through the task very carefully. And she might realize that this is a pivotal moment and what I do matters. And so she chooses carefully. Her conduct is thought out, it's decisive, it's courageous, and she doesn't just react according to how she feels. She doesn't just stumble into the day reacting at the mercy of circumstances, like I do often. Not even 3 cups of coffee can help that feel better.
consider the magnitude of focusing on a worthwhile goal. What does this field represent? What does this field represent? She envisions and considers and she notices a field. What is a field? What is it? It's a place to sow seed. It's potential. It's potential. She sees potential somewhere. She has a seminal thought and has a vision of something that could be made out of something or something that could happen. Where does that seminal thought come from? That seed of wisdom is called chokmah. That's what wisdom is, chokmah. That's the Hebrew word for it. And that chokmah comes into her mind and she goes, oh, I have an idea. But it's an otherworldly idea. But God gives her the choice. You go, oh, that's too hard. That's too much. Someone else needs to do that. Or she rises up. And what does she do? She buys it. She buys it. I discovered a really cool thing years ago when I was studying this with some ladies here. And it's hidden in the language here. This verse in our Bible says, she considers a field and buys it, and with the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. The word she is actually he. That pronoun in the Hebrew is he. So this is what it really says. It says, she considers a field, so she sees an empty field that seed could be sown in. She has a flash of wisdom. She overcomes the temptation to ignore it or to be discouraged, and she purchases it. And with the work of her hands, he plants a vineyard. Who's the he? God, her husband. So if it's really his field anyway, and he actually is going to do a lot of the work, what does her involvement matter? Her involvement is everything. That's what this life is. He invites us into the divine process of seeing, of doing, of making something, of living life, of investing, of overcoming. He lets us partner with him. But he is our kinsman redeemer. He actually buys the field. Is that amazing? It's so amazing. There's a very favorite author of mine, top five. His name is Akiva Tatz, T-A-T-Z. And he wrote a book called Will, Freedom, and Victory. And here's a short quote. It says, if there is very little effort in achieving a victory, there will be very little growth in the process. No effort is expended, no resistance to overcome, there will be no personal growth. The muscle of human mind and will grows in proportion, listen, the muscle of human mind and will grows in proportion to the resistance it must overcome. An effortless victory is not a growth exercise. God has a divine curriculum that he has predestined for each of us. Nothing is random. And what seems like a terrible trial for Sherry doesn't seem like a really big deal to me, but it's a huge deal for you because that's part of your curriculum, Sherry. And it's different from Kathy's or Bethany's or Pam's or mine. But he designs it for us to choose to resist the temptation to give up and to move forward and to rise while it is still night and to see a field and see the potential and buy it and partner with him. And he says, tell you what, you come that far, I bought the field. I'll help you plant the field and we will make something beautiful of this. That's the life of the woman of valor. So this field, in my mind, is very likely a vineyard. And the reason I say that is because more than anything, a vineyard has the potential to bring great blessing or great tragedy. Okay? Another thing about a vineyard is it takes great patience. You don't get your first harvest for, what, PM 3 years when you plant grapes? You're a winemaker. Anybody know about grapes?
3 years.
3 years. So I like immediate gratification, which is why I've never been successful growing a grapevine. I tried once, and I wasn't patient enough to care for it and wait. But I've always thought, oh, it'd be really great to have, like, a really beautiful grapevine. So let's say that this field that the woman of valor sees and recognizes the potential for is a vineyard in her imagination. And eventually, those grapes can be harvested, and wine can be used for happy occasions, to make sacred blessings, just to make me happy. I love a good glass of wine. But it also has the potential for great drunkenness, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Even in Scripture, we have examples of people who drank too much fruit of the vine and terrible things happened because they became drunk. Noah? Yeah, there were others. Even in our introduction to the Woman of Valor, remember, Bathsheba writes to her son Solomon, and she says, listen, you're called to be royal. You're called to exemplify royal behavior. Don't use your position as king just to accumulate too many wives and too many treasures and overindulge in wine and food. That is not what a king does. Remember what she says a king does? Yes, thank you. Speak up for the ones who can't speak for themselves. She says, open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all the unfortunate. Open your mouth and judge righteously and defend the rights of the afflicted and the needy. That's the purpose of royalty in God's economy. Now, in the world, the whole thing of royalty, people tend to, you know, power corrupts in absolute, power corrupts absolutely, and all of that. And then we have people who defect, who don't want to be royal anymore. That's a whole other news story. But one of the questions that someone emailed this week, and it was another really good one, is, so what is, I think it might have been Val, so what does royalty really look like? And I jotted down a few verses. One of them is Ecclesiastes 10:17. And it talks about how royalty is for strength and not for drunkenness. God has called us to live lives of royalty because we're in a position to see and know and tap into endless resources to serve the people around us. Real royals are servants. Real royals are servants. I don't even know how I got off on that, but we're going to go back to the vineyard for a minute. So traditionally, the woman who is mentioned to exemplify this verse that we're talking about is Jochebed. Because for whatever reason, traditionally, Moses himself has been referred to as the vineyard. And I think it's because his life brought so much rich harvest. And that's a whole other study, isn't it, Sharon? I mean, it's really, really fascinating why he's considered a vineyard in the Tanakh. So now I want us to consider how Moses' mother embodies this intriguing portion of Scripture. Who is she? Who's Jochebed, and what do we see her doing? She's the mother of a little baby boy during a time in history and in her nation that was very, very, very dark. But she rose up. She's another one that rose up while it was still night. And she said, hold on. I can't let this baby of mine, I can't let him be tossed into the Nile River. He has to be saved. There was something inside of her that just knew she had to save him, but she knew she couldn't save him. As a mother, she knew he needed to be saved, but she couldn't save him. That describes motherhood. That's why I love the story. So what does she do? She weaves a basket. Okay? She weaves a basket. Can you imagine the day? Can you imagine the day? There's a baby. Can you imagine taking that baby down to the Nile River and knowing that the only chance that baby has for survival is for you to put it in a basket that you wove with your own hands and then take your hands off. Because as long as you're holding on to the basket, it's not going to work. You have to let go of the basket. So I'm going to share something very, I didn't plan to share this, but the last time I tried to teach the study, a few of you were there, Valerie was there, and I was in a dark night. It was a long, dark night in my life, and I wasn't sharing a whole lot of it with anybody because I was embarrassed. The animal voices were talking to me. This is your fault. You should be ashamed. And I was just, but I thought, you know what? This is good material. I've got women that want to go through this. I can do this. And I opened the Bible the very first night. We were all gathered. There were like 15 women in my basement. Who else was there? Kathleen, you were there. Ladies, I had never had a panic attack until that moment. In front of 15 dear friends who were expecting me to say something important. And I remember sitting there and I looked at my Bible. I promise you, it was like squiggly lines. I couldn't even focus my eyes. And I had that white noise in my ears. And I got really dizzy and really nauseous and I couldn't think. I mean, nothing meant anything. I could not think. And I kept looking at, and they were all feeling really awkward. And a few people tried to rescue me. Thank you, Kathleen. And they would like throw me like little prompts. And I was like, and then I just started to cry. You were there. And I just started to cry. And I couldn't quit crying. And pretty soon it was not just tears, but it was snot. The whole thing. It was just, I was crying. And it was so, it could have been humiliating, but I chose to allow it to be humbling. And I looked at the ladies and I said, I think I just need to share what's going on in my life. I think I just need to share what's going on in my life. Because what was going on in my life is that I had a son that I couldn't save. And God was calling me to put him in a basket and to let the basket go. And I didn't want to. I was so scared of losing him. And in my brain, the animal voices were saying, you got to hold on. You got to worry. You got to fear. You got to panic. You can't let him go. Don't trust God. God's not got a good idea about this. He let this happen in the first place. You control this. And I was beyond a wreck. You guys, I was a mess. Bethany, you know. I couldn't function. And so God had spoken to me and he had said, you need to be Jochebed. You need to take that son and put him in a basket and walk down to the Nile River, which the enemy might mean for destruction, but I'm going to use it for life. And I'm like, are you really? And I was doubting that I heard from him. And he spoke this to me so clearly one night, so clearly. And I was sitting on the couch in this wrestling match. I was right here going, it was such a tug of war, the physical and the spiritual, and I was like, oh, and I was just, and finally I went, okay, and I said, I'm going to do it, and Grant walked in the room just at that moment, I promise you, and he said, I was just reading the most interesting scripture, you know, where God says, be still and know that I am God, do you know what be still means? I said, be still? And he said, no. He said, it means loosen your grip. And then I started crying again. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I go, let me share what I'm hearing. And he listened and he agreed. And he said, Robin, you got to put him in the basket. You got to put him in the basket. And this is trust. Because my brain was telling me that if I relinquished the fear and control in my own mind, that something really bad would happen. But I've learned that until I vacate a space, God won't fill it. He doesn't insert himself and make us do anything. He invites us. And so, as if that wasn't enough, I promise you this happened. I promise you. I went to work the next morning, and I'm mulling this over, and I come home from work, and Peter Onguko, of blessed memory, because he's died recently, he was a gentleman from Kenya, beautiful man, and he would come to my house once a year, and he would just stay with us for a week, and it was wonderful. But he was always very reticent and careful. He never talked about anything personal. He never inserted himself into my business. He just prayed for us and encouraged us and kind of did his own thing. And on this occasion, I walk in the door. All this is going on in my mind. I'm almost ready to completely relinquish this mental control. And he says, Robin, how are you? And his skin was just black, just this beautiful black man, and he looked in my eyes, and I said, I'm not good. I said, I haven't been well, and I said, it's, and I told him what was happening, and I promise you, he reached across the table, and he grabbed my hands in his, and he'd never done anything like this before, and he looked in my eyes, and he said, you must be Yaakoved.
Oh my gosh.
He did. And I said, Peter, why did you say that to me? And he said, because I have a son and I know how you feel. And God sees the good that he can bring into potential with that man. But you have to put him in the basket. Oh, my gosh. I said, okay, uncle. So I got to tell you, after all that wrestling and all that pain, I decided to do what Psalm 46:10 said, to loosen my grip and to know that he's God. And I can't explain it. There, everything changed. Now, the circumstances of life didn't change just like that. But my inner world, mm-hmm. Angie, immediately changed. Suddenly, I had peace. I had hope. I knew that whatever happened, that God was going to take care of that basket while it floated down the river, even if it went around the corner and I couldn't see it anymore. Because when I started to picture that, he said, you can't see the basket, Robin, but I see it. I see it. Talk about needing to trust. But he saved my son. He chose to save my son. He rescued my son. And I've learned a lesson, and I've had to revisit this principle, ladies, over and over and over. It might not be something as specific and literal as my baby son, but people and things in my life that God says, are you done yet? Are you going to let go and let me prove that I really am God? Are you going to get out of the way so I can fill this space? And then I have to take it to the river, and I have to release it. And sometimes in my prayer time, I literally picture that process. So that's what I want to ask you tonight. What is it, if there's something right now that God wants you to put in that basket and then take your hands off? It might be a mate. It might be a child, it might be something that happened in the past with a parent. Put it in a basket and let it go. Okay? Pray about that. I promise you, this principle isn't a figment of my imagination. This is a very, very real thing. Well, you know, the fruit of Yaakov's act of trust was the rescue of the nation of Israel. She envisioned that God would assist her in planting a field, didn't she? The purchase price for her was pretty big. She had a lot of personal discomfort. But she overcame and she acted fearlessly. What an inspiration. What an inspiration. So I have to say that on Friday nights, when we lift our cup and we say the blessing over the wine, after studying this passage and beginning to understand what God is saying to us through this passage, and we say, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam borei pri golfin, blessed are you, Adonai our God, King of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine. It means all the more to me, and I hope that it'll mean all the more to you from now on. So I think that's where we're going to end things tonight. A few more verses to hopefully make our woman of valor come into sharper focus. She's not there to discourage us. She's not there to make us feel like we can't measure up. She's there to invite us, to inspire us. Life coach. She's there to coach us, to mentor us. Okay? But so few of us care to see her. And then when we get a glimpse of her, so few of us have the courage to get really well acquainted with her. I hope you get well acquainted. So, any questions or comments tonight? Aren't these verses fun? Did you ever dream that this much was in these verses? And we're skimming the surface. We really are. We don't have time to dig as deeply as we could. But still, it's great.
Robin, you had mentioned before when you were talking about the merchant ships that not only does she bring food back to her family, but treasures. Mm-hmm. And that the prayers and the wisdom that she earned, they're treasures. And I think that just goes with the whole pearl thing.
It does.
And being pearled, and she knows.
She's building a beautiful life.
Yeah.
And she is adorned with beauty. Not physically necessarily, but. So do we see ourselves as a body with a soul that's sort of incidental? Or do we see ourselves as a soul with a body, and suddenly your values flip and how you spend your time begins to change? And the peace that you start to experience as you bring connection to this broken world, you begin to get it. Life begins to make sense. And it's just a great adventure. That's what he's called us to. He didn't call us to a boring, blah life. He didn't call us to an easy one. It can be very messy. Very, very messy. I'm going to turn this off.